Welcome to Savor. I'm Danielle Beck Ellsworth, a licensed marriage and family therapist.
And I'm Kelly Hines, a registered dietitian. And this week, in honor of National Eating Disorders Awareness Week, we're here with a special guest, Jen Pachichi. And I just want to let you know a little bit about her. She's a writer, mentor, and teacher who shows women how to make peace with food. She is a certified life coach, certified intuitive eating counselor, and she holds a master's degree in health education. She's written for The Huffington Post, Tiny Buddha, and type2diabetes.com. And you can check her out on her website where you'll read her blog and hear more about her story. And that is www.jenpachichi.com. And that's P-I-C-I-C-C-I. And I will put that on our website as well if you're looking for it. So welcome, Jen.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I love you guys.
Thanks.
So I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for reaching out to us and emailing us with your topic ideas and offering to have us interview you. We really love to hear from our listeners, and it's a special treat to have a real live Savor listener on our show.
Yay. No, it's the pleasure's all mine. It's cool. I'm like, really? I get to be on? Like, it's such a great show. So it's awesome for me.
Thanks. Great.
Thank you.
So why don't we just start at the beginning with your story that you're going to be sharing with us and our listeners. So you've had a journey toward positive body image, and it sounds like the beginning there were some bumps and some diets along the way, as there seems to be. But through pregnancy and the birth of your daughter, you've really come to an amazing, strong place in your life. So whatever the beginning is to you, wherever you want to start.
Yeah, it's like I feel like my story is a little bit strange, because so often when I hear about women having these problems or struggles with food and body image, it's like they were put on a diet when they were like 7 by their mother. And I did not have that. Like, my mom didn't seem weird about food. There were no, like, my mom never pressured me to lose weight or she was like a pretty positive role model for me. And I never really thought about it that much, which sounds weird because you don't hear that very often. But then as I went to college and I gained some weight. And in fact, I remember going to a physical, and the male nurse said to me, he's like, well, you've gained 10 pounds in the last year. You better watch out. And it was just like the fact that he was a man, the fact that, I don't know, it just made me feel really kind of bad. And I finished college and I had gotten to a higher weight, and I had never really been athletic. And I decided, you know, I was like, I want to start taking better care of myself. So it started from like a very good place of like, I want to exercise regularly. And I started counting calories for the first time, and I was like 21. Like, I was not, you know, a 13-year-old girl. So, at first it was just this really like totally, I felt like it was coming from a healthy place. You know, I still ate whatever I wanted. I just tried to, cut down my portions a little. And then what happened is, so I graduated from college in 2001 in May. And over that summer, you know, I was doing this, I was exercising more and losing some weight. And then September 11th happened. And I lived in Connecticut at the time. And like a lot of people, it, you know, had a huge impact on my life. And I was like, you know, I hadn't found a full-time job yet. And I was still working at a part-time job. And I thought, I'm going to just like go travel and go do stuff. So I moved, to Vermont to work at a ski lodge, of all things. And I was living in the staff house with a bunch of other young people. And I'll never forget, I feel like this was this weird turning point for me. So I had lost some weight. I felt really great. And there were a bunch of other women, young women there. And this guy, I'd been flirting with him. And then I heard through the grapevine that he had said the only girl worth dating was this other girl. And she weighed less than I did. She was thinner than I was. And I noticed that I was still a little heavier than when the other girls. And for some reason, that just like, at that age, at 22, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I should be thinner. If I was thinner, then guys would like me. Like, how it came that late in my life, I'm not exactly sure what that mechanism was, but that's when I really started getting like very preoccupied with my weight and wanting to lose more weight. And over the course of the years, I just continued to lose weight, and I just kept being like overly preoccupied with food. And I didn't realize it though. Like, I thought I was being healthy. I thought it was good for me to do that. You know, like there are a lot of mixed, no, there aren't mixed messages. There's like a very clear message. Like, you should be on a cleanse. You should weigh less. You should be a smaller size, you know, like, and that is the information that I was getting. And I didn't have, you know, I didn't have anyone saying to me, like, this information is not necessarily good information. I just, you know, I didn't have a resource for that. So, so the years went by, and when I was, around 25, I got down to what was my lowest adult weight. I was considered a healthy weight. Like, my BMI wasn't too low or anything. But what started happening, I'll never forget being at, I was at a party, and there was carrot cake on the counter, and I was obsessed with the carrot cake. Like, I could not stop thinking about it, and I kept going inside and like having another bite. And then the hostess sent me home with some. I was so full when I got home, but I ate the rest of the cake. And, you know, of course the next day I was like, I gotta clamp down on my diet. I gotta get better about, you know, eating less. I can't regain any of the weight that I lost. And that kept happening. It kept, all of a sudden after that, it was like food would get into my head and I would feel out of control around it. I would feel like really preoccupied with it, like more than I even had been before. I was always thinking about like what I should eat, how much I should eat. And if there was a food like I shouldn't, quote, like shouldn't be eating, it would just get stuck in my head. And I would get that like out of control feeling of like, I can't stop eating. And I would eat, you know, I would feel sick, and I just did not understand what was going on. And again, with the, I would like to think there are mixed messages, but really the messages I was getting were like, oh, you look great. You know, how do you, how do you keep your figure? And I worked at an inn, an historic inn. By this time I had moved down to North Carolina. And I just remember this guy was visiting for a wedding. He was like 50. And he's like, oh, you look like a model. He's like, you should come back to New York with me. Like all this weird, like sort of reinforcement that like, this is good. You should be thin. Now you look acceptable. Now, you know, now men like you. It was really, I like thinking back now, this was 10 years ago. I'm 36 now. I was 26 when that happened. And just, it's really, you know, when you're in your 20s or your teens, you really don't, a lot of times you don't have that anchor to know what's important. And I just really felt like my body weight was the most important thing. And, so I ended up just developing this obsession, and luckily the internet was around to help me. And when I started reading about the symptoms, or the is symptoms the right word, of BED. And I was like, that sounds like what I am going through. Like that eating a lot of food in a small amount of time, the so feeling out of control. Yeah.
BED being binge eating disorder, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Just in case.
Too familiar with the terminology. Yeah.
So just a quick question. You said that you were looking things up on the internet. And so that kind of makes me think that there was something in your mind that was saying this isn't right or this isn't normal. And I'm wondering when that started happening for you.
Yeah, I would say after not too long of a period of time, within definitely a couple of months, because I noticed, so I was living with someone, and whenever I was home alone, I was eating like just, and I thought, this cannot be, like, this didn't used to happen to me. And I felt like it was happening to me. I almost felt like I had no choice.
Okay.
And I was like, I didn't used to, food wasn't my first thought when I was home alone before, you know, and I didn't eat so much. Like, I didn't go to bed. I'm sure there are times when I ate too much cake or whatever, but there, you know, going to bed with my stomach hurting, going to bed feeling awful, and then that guilty feeling in the morning, I was like, this is not, like, this, I knew it wasn't normal. I had, like, I had been to therapy in college. Like, I'd already started on sort of like the personal self-help and reaching out to professionals for help journey. So I knew that I was feeling off balance. So for me, I don't know, maybe I realized it sooner than other people would have because I had that background. But yeah, I definitely, I think the guilt and the just knowing like I was physically hurting myself. I knew that wasn't normal for
me.
And
it sounds like it was not when you were really restricting and exercising. It was once you started overeating and binge eating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like when
I
knew something was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's
and
very
I think
true.
That happens a lot of times because it's really nice to have that positive reinforcement of you're losing weight or you look good. And so I've found that a lot of my clients, they didn't seek help when they were in that phase. It definitely came after the, ugh, I don't like this. This is out of control phase.
That is such a good point, and I never really thought about that before. I never occurred to me ever to see a counselor or to seek any information. The only information I was seeking was, you know, how many calories are in a baked potato? Like, it was never, ever. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think even once people realize, yeah, I don't think people realize how detrimental that cycle can be. And like, once you start dieting, how much it can take over your world and what it can turn into. It's applauded. It's applauded.
Right.
Everyone is like, oh, that's so great. You're so good. It's so good that you're such a good girl. Like, there's just a lot of, it's everywhere. It's a very good point.
And I think the piece where you were realizing that, you know, there's something wrong, this doesn't feel good, I think it also highlights that there's more to it than how initially it felt triggered that you wanted, you know, this guy's attention or any, you know, some guy's attention, and being thin could get you that. It's, you know, it's so much deeper than, and any eating disorder is so much deeper than just the thinness or just a type of attention. But you get to a place where you're just, you feel so down, and there's a lot of buried emotions there.
Yes. Yeah. And coming out of it has been such a journey of dealing with so much of that stuff. And I, you know, this is, you asked me if I had any questions for you guys, and I started seeing a counselor around that time about other stuff. And she was not a counselor or a therapist trained in eating disorders. But I told her what I was experiencing. And, you know, I don't know if she officially, she said I was a binge eater. She didn't really I don't know what the official way they say, like, you have an eating disorder. I don't know if there's like fairy dust or what, but that didn't happen. But what was really upsetting to me, and I actually wrote about this on my blog, was that she ended up saying to me, the way you'll fix this is you need to give up white flour and white sugar. Mm-hmm. And she told me, if you stop eating that, you won't have that urge to binge anymore. You'll be off that roller coaster. You'll be completely fine. Mm-hmm. And she was a therapist. She was, you know, in her 50s. She seemed, you know, really experienced. So I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember one night standing, like, holding onto my freezer because I just wanted to eat something. But I promised myself I would give up sugar for 30 days. And damn it, I wasn't going to give in. And like, looking back at that, just, I thought that advice was so unhelpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to hear from like the perspective of people who deal with this all the time. And, you know, Kelly, you're a dietitian. Like, where does that advice come from? And why did she think that would help me? And am I right? Like, I thought, now I think it's terrible advice, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first red flag is that a therapist was giving you nutritional advice.
that's a good point.
You know, but it's hard to tease that out. But because I think with nutritional advice, it comes from everywhere. It comes from magazines and a commercial and your friend and, you know, and your pediatrician, your doctors, you know, like, it's just like, oh, everyone's an expert on nutrition, right? We all eat and we're not. and you know, so I'm especially mindful of that since I work so closely with dietitians, and I recognize this, but it's, you know, I have clients who will ask me nutritional questions, and I often will say, it's, you know, that's out of my scope of practice. Like, that's not my training to tell you what to eat and what not to eat. but I will support your dietitian's decisions on that.
Yeah. So, you know, and she gave you something very specific, but I hear that from patients all the time where they're trying, and you know, there's a lot of shame around your eating disorder or eating problems, and you're coming to a therapist and it's supposed to be a safe place and you're kind of looking for answers from them. But if they don't have eating disorders experience, you might not get a very helpful answer. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've definitely heard from clients, well, you just need to exercise more, or you just need to stop that, and you just need to lose the weight and it's going to be fine, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, well, if that was just so easy, you know,
right. Everybody
why
would
we
be
here? You know, right. Like, thanks. Right. I didn't think of that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really tough. It's tough to be in. And I mean, that white flour, white sugar thing, that's been around forever. And, you know, I don't know where it started, but I know that the Overeaters Anonymous group, mm-hmm. that was really their thing for a long yep. time. Yep. And that's still part of some Overeaters Anonymous groups, but a lot of them have moved away from it. You know, and we have talked about this a little bit before in our episode about, I think it was our intuitive eating episode. I just kind of went back and listened to that one. A little bit about sugar addiction and kind of the different viewpoints on that. But it's kind of making a resurfacing in the past several years where you're going to read a lot about that. And so I don't know that we could refer our listeners back to that episode where we talk about that. But I mean, that's just a huge topic of debate yeah. and discussion. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it does for some people work forever, but in my experience, most of the time mm-hmm. it just works for the rest of the people just for a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you listened to our episode where we interviewed Sharon Zimbler, and she's an addiction specialist, specifically like drugs and alcohol, but also eating disorders. And she said that they have a saying in AA that anytime you're sober, your addiction is just doing push-ups. And mm-hmm. when it comes back, it's going to come back with a vengeance and even stronger than ever before mm-hmm. if you're not doing the work to be mm-hmm. sober, stay sober. And I think that that's what most people experience with that white flour and white sugar thing is, yes, for a time period, I can do that. And then I'm safe because I can't eat cake and I can't eat bread and I can't eat all those things
yeah.
that are trouble for me. But then when it ends, like it almost always does, it's like floodgates are open and it's a lot worse than it was before.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was kind of just a tangent, but
That's okay.
That was really interesting.
No, it's that, that happened. Question. So it's good to look at a lot of different things about yeah. that question.
Yeah. So you started with a therapist and then... Mm-hmm. You know, tried yeah. that out, didn't quite work.
You know, she helped me with a lot of stuff that I was going through. She didn't help me with that. Mm-hmm. Like I just didn't really talk about it anymore to her after mm-hmm. that. And I feel like there's just a whole period of years where it was just kind of a blur. I struggled with binge eating and I was constantly trying to stop. And I was also going back and forth between a diet one day or one week and binge eating, you know, like I could go back and forth every other day. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't making the connection that my binge eating had started when I became preoccupied with losing weight. Mm-hmm. And that every time I went on a diet, I would binge my way out of it. Like I couldn't put those pieces together. I kept thinking, well, when I find the right diet, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't want to make this about weight at all, but I, you know, I had lost that weight. I'd gotten down to my lowest adult weight. And then when the binge eating really took off, I gained back to what I think is just where I fall. It was what I weighed mm-hmm. in high school. And again, I was never a thin person, but I'm a healthy person, you know, but I was obsessed with, like, I kept my jeans that I had when I was my thinnest, and they were in the top of my closet taunting me for years. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, when I figure this out, I'll get back to that weight and everything will be fine. You know, like mm-hmm. I couldn't see how the two were related. I just could not see it. And it makes me laugh now because it became so clear later. But at the time I was just stuck, and I would write in my journal, like, I'm going to go a week without binge eating. And I just would be like, tomorrow I'm going to eat I've been a vegetarian most of my life, so it was never like a high protein or Atkins type thing, but it would always be like, I'm going to do follow this, or I'm not going to eat peanut butter, or I'm whatever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. So that there was a big blur period there where that was just going on. And finally I got to a point where I finally realized, I was like, you know what? I think dieting, is making this worse. So I thought I really should explore the idea of giving up diets. But that, when you're talking about what you have to go through to get to that point, when I realized I had to give up dieting, I realized I had to give up trying to lose weight. And the idea of giving up trying to lose weight meant I had to accept the way my body was. And that felt unimaginable to me. That was really, like, I would be okay with it for a few days. And then I'd be like, no, I can't. Like, I just couldn't. I couldn't sit with that. I couldn't accept that my body would be stuck the way it was. Like, I didn't think I could do it. And that's where a lot of that, I think people get so preoccupied with the idea that once they fix their body, everything will be okay. They forget, like, there's so much more. There's so much more. And even though, like I said, I didn't have a mother trying to tell me to lose weight when I was growing up, you know, I had, I had a lot of self-confidence issues. My, you know, not to get, like, too far into it, but, like, my father didn't really pay attention to me. And my parents got divorced. And my father never told me he loved me. And, you know, a lot of that stuff. It's almost like you have to heal all of you to get to that place. So what ended up happening, and so I'm going to tell, like, the final year, and that ties it into my pregnancy. So I did this one more diet. I did the Whole 30, which is a paleo, type diet. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. The people who write the website are, like, really nice, and they seem like they genuinely care about your health. And so I did this diet, and I had mentioned that I'd been a vegetarian, and this diet required me to eat meat again. So I was trying to eat meat. I was trying to do this, like, radical change. And again, I had it in my head, like, well, maybe I just need to eat differently. Maybe, you know, maybe this'll be it. And at the same time, I knew, like, the last couple of years prior to that, I was like, I need to stop dieting. But here I was kind of convincing myself it was like a lifestyle change. Instead of a diet. And I have to tell you, for me, I felt horrible, like, the whole time. It was not for me at all. And when it was over, it was back to the same exact, I saw, like, okay, this is causing me to overeat. Like, being restrictive like this and forcing myself to eat foods because I think I should is not, it's not helping me. It's not making me feel better. It's making my binge eating worse. So that happened in the fall. And then a whole series of things happened to me in 2013 that really shifted everything for me. And I got to say, throughout these previous years, cause by that time I had just turned 33. So I'd been dealing with this for the better part of a decade. That year I had to take antibiotics for an infection that I had. The antibiotics basically poisoned my liver, and I ended up, no joke, turning yellow. I had to leave work on short-term disability because I was so sick. I had, it's called cholestatic liver disease, drug-induced cholestatic liver disease. Ironically, I had no appetite whatsoever, and I ended up losing like 15 pounds because I, like, could not eat, and I was constantly itchy. It was horrible. But when something like that happens to you, it sort of makes you reevaluate right. What's important to you.
Yeah.
I recovered from that, thank goodness, because I really didn't know it was going to happen. I recovered from that. Within a couple of weeks, my father went into the hospital, and while he was in the hospital, he was in the hospital for a few weeks, and this is interesting to me. I went on another diet. As I mentioned, I wasn't close to him, but he's my father, you know? Mm-hmm. And I went on another once again. It was one of those, it was Eat to Live, that it was like a very low fat, like, high vegetable. I'm like, yes. Oh, I'll be so healthy. And I was doing that. And my husband, I'd gotten married in the meantime. My husband had to have surgery. And
oh my gosh.
The day he had surgery, my dad's girlfriend called me and said, your father's going into hospice care. And My father was 64 at the time. He had never taken good care of himself. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years, and he still lived in Connecticut. And so basically my dad's girlfriend said, "You need to fly up here like now. Like I don't know if he's going to be here next weekend. Like you have to fly up now." So I stayed with my husband for like two more days. I was still on this diet, and this plays into the story. And I flew up to Connecticut, and I found a Whole Foods on the way from the airport to the hospice center so that I could get like it sounds so silly to me now, like so I could get the right food. I tracked down like a vegan restaurant in Branford, Connecticut, so I could eat like the right thing. My dad and his girlfriend, they've known each other since college. They had been dating 12 years. My father wanted to get married before he died. So I was there for their wedding at the hospice center, and I didn't eat the chocolate cupcake that the nurse gave us as wedding cake because I was on a diet. And I left that night and I went to sleep at my friend's house. And the next morning, I turned on my phone. I had turned it off. I was so exhausted. And my now stepmother had called to tell me that he had died. And I flew home. And when I got home, I ate everything. And that was the last time I ever went on a diet. I was like, and that's the last time I ever binged either. And I like now it's so clear to me why that happened. And I would think I was using the diet as a way to have that control because my whole, you know, it doesn't matter how close you are to your parent. It's like if your parent is going through that. So that happened. And after that, I was like, I'm not dieting anymore. I'm not doing this to myself. I'm not, it's, I could just see so clearly what was happening. My father dies 3 weeks later. I got pregnant, which was intended. But obviously, you know, really, you know, my father had just died. It was rough. And I will say, during my pregnancy, I struggled a little because of the constant weigh-ins. They weigh you so much. I don't know if either of you have children, but it's like every time you go to the doctor, it's like, don't gain too much. You know, like you're supposed to be in the right. So that did add some stress to me, but as soon I had already made that decision, and as soon as I was pregnant, I was like, I'm sticking to this. I'm never going back. I'm not gonna try to like keep my weight down. I'm not, because I know it makes me binge. I'm not going to, I was like, I'm gonna feed this baby and I'm gonna feed myself. And then when we found out it was a girl, I was just like that much more dedicated to it because I know what world she's coming into. And I know when I originally pitched the story, I wanted to talk about my post baby body. But I feel like it's important to know all that other stuff before I can tell you, you know, I had this baby and I am more comfortable with my body now than I ever was when I was thin. And that's like the point I try to make to people, like it isn't your body, it's your mind. It's not. I have stretch marks. I have, you know, I have loose skin. I have a baby attached to my boob, like a large part of the day. Like it doesn't, but I still, I just, my body is like the thing responsible for letting me have a baby and for being here and for, I don't know. I just see it as so much more now. Like I used to see it as this thing that was supposed to be thin, and now I see it as this like tool for me to be a human. So,
I'm just like taking in your whole story.
I
So
know, it's a lot.
powerful. And it also, I'm just really in awe because it seemed like so many of these insights you developed on your own. Like you had these experiences and then you stopped and looked back and looked back on your journey and your that time with your dad and was like, "Oh, that's why I was doing all that." And that's why this cycle is happening and here's what I need to do to make that change. And I think that's really hard to do. Like even if you know, people are aware of the cycles, can be hard to change, but to really discover what was happening on your own and then make that commitment to yourself to not go back is huge.
I'm sort of maybe like self, not self, like self betterment, that sounds weird. Like I'm good enough the way I am, but like I love learning about myself. So I think for me to I was always curious about like putting the pieces together and that stuff. So yeah, it was maybe easier for me than maybe some people to be. I was always interested in why it was happening, you know?
Is there a word for that, Danielle?
Self-improvement? Is
I
that
don't know.
what you're talking, a word instead of self-betterment?
I don't know, just what she's describing, like wanting to always look inside and figure out what's going on. And I don't know,
Oh,
just from a therapist perspective, I thought maybe that was the
self-analytical.
word. Ah, that's maybe a good one, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I think I mean it's just sounds just like an overall curiosity about yourself, but I think I think it's a human drive, like, you know, whether it's curiosity about the world we live in or why we're here or who we are, like I think on some level we're all kind of questioning and like how do these pieces fit together? And for you it was, you know, focused on, you know, the eating and kind of that part of your life. And then I'm sure other things too, but with what you're sharing with us
Well,
and
that
it
just
made sense.
makes me think of just one of the reasons I'm so passionate about talking about this is because after I came out of it, you know, I've spent time in like the intuitive eating like Facebook groups and different stuff, and I just see, especially with women, and I'm sure it happens with men as well, and you guys would know better than I would, but especially with women, it just seems like such a preoccupation with weight loss and body that there's just a missing of this whole bigger picture of like what your life can be. It's almost like I have to put my life on hold until this part is right or something. And yeah.
Well, that's why I found it interesting you were emphasizing that your mom never, you know, made any comments or said anything. And when you were saying that, I was thinking that, well, that, yes, if that had happened, that would have been a big influence, but it also, it's could be a drop in the bucket compared to what you hear on a societal and cultural level. You know, being a woman in our society, you can't escape the pressure to be thin and to look a certain way. I mean, it's around every corner. It is everywhere. And this idea that your happiness comes from outside of you. It comes from this external source and it's not internal. Therefore, it's the striving to change the outside appearance to get to enough, to get to happiness. And it's, yeah, I mean, since you can absorb it, that's where I think, you know, it is that critiquing, it's questioning, it's examining your life, it's having open discussions like we're having, because we need tools to really get through that mud and that the messages there and get to the other side and be in a place of positive body image.
Do
Yeah.
you have you ever have you ever looked back? Or just one like slipped into that thinking again, or like, oh man.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I think now it's something where if I notice myself engaging in any behavior that reminds me of those days, I immediately am like, whoa, something's going on here. Like for example, I remember like I had made a chocolate cake and I had a slice of it one afternoon. And then all of a sudden I was having another slice and I wasn't hungry. And I was like, wait, what's happening? And I realized I had been telling myself, you shouldn't be having chocolate cake as an afternoon snack. And as soon as I put that sort of limit on it, it became, well, I'm gonna eat all of the cake then. And as like another example, like food wise, I read there's an interesting book called Diet Cults by it's Matt. Gosh, I can't think of his name, but it's Diet Cults. It came out 2014 or 2015, and he basically says how like none of the popular mainstream diets like work per se, and there is no like one perfect way to eat, which I'm cool with that. And then at the end, he talks about concentrating more on eating, you know, vegetables or fruits or whatever, and he has this sort of hierarchy. And I was like, well, maybe I should try that. And as soon as I was like counting how many vegetables I was eating, immediately I started getting all like graspy and like like worried again. I was like, I can't, this doesn't make any sense for me. It's too much like a diet. I do my best to eat in a way that makes me feel good, and that's just gonna have to be good enough for me.
Yeah.
And in with the body stuff, yeah, you know, I am a woman living in modern America. I would say I'm less connected to outside influences than a lot of people because I live on the top of a mountain with no cable, so I don't like see like Keeping Up with the Kardashians or anything. And I'm pretty like, I don't subscribe to any magazines that you would think of as the type of magazine. I know basically like all women's magazines have images that aren't that great, but I don't like, I don't get Cosmo or any like, or even Shape or anything like that, where you would see a lot of that stuff. And my husband's very supportive. My family's very supportive. So I feel like I escape a lot of that's the stuff that would make me feel bad. And if I ever do have a time where I'm starting to feel like I'm worried about my body in some way, like I'll read, like there's a quote or a story from Anne Lamott about like going on a diet and gaining the weight, or she says to her therapist that she's going on a diet, and her therapist says, how much weight do you want to gain this time, dear? And she just has a lot of like really sort of heartwarming stuff that always reminds me that, you know, my body is this beautiful tool that I have. I don't want to say tool because that makes it sound like, but it's just this like great thing that I get to have.
Mm-hmm. It's where you live.
It is where I live. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about this before we were talking, like if someone else was in this position, I feel like I was so stuck on having like the right kind of body. And it's almost like now that I'm not a religious person at all, but I'm spiritual. And if a person has a sense of purpose almost, or like they're here on the earth for however long they get. And it's like the body is the thing that like, yeah, I'm sure you've heard that quote that says like the body is here to carry the soul around. Like reminding myself of that, like everything that I write comes through my fingers that are attached to my body. Everything that I get to say, everything, like I just reminding myself of that more spiritual aspect, or of that more like my essence is just here in my body and I'm so glad that I have it. Like that helps snap me out of the like, you should really have flatter abs kind of thought. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would say it creeps in sometimes. But overall, it's just, I have so many more wonderful things to focus on that it's, and life is so much better not worrying about like whether or not I can eat something. And, you know, like my husband went out tonight. We're on the East Coast, so it's nighttime here while we're recording this. My husband went out tonight and I don't have to worry that I'm going to be obsessed with food when he leaves, because I can eat if I want to, you know, like there are no more rules and stuff.
That's like freedom, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's the word.
I mean, you were thinking that same
thing. Yeah, I was like, freedom!
Yeah. I mean, I just imagine like that must be a little hell to live in, to not even be able to have time alone without worrying about what's going to happen and not being able to trust yourself.
So true. Yeah, not being able to trust yourself, because it does when you're in the throes of it. At least for me, it was like it felt beyond my control. It was it was an awful feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's amazing. Yeah. I'm also wondering, because you are a certified intuitive eating coach. I'm kind of wondering when you discovered that and that path that you got on to do that.
Yeah, so I was, as soon as I realized something was going on and I started, like, the library is my favorite place. I started getting out all these different books. I read that book, Runaway Eating. Do you know that book by, I think it's by Cynthia, oh gosh.
No.
It's called Runaway Eating. That was kind of a helpful book. And then I found that intuitive eating book. But I have to tell you, it took me years to really understand intuitive eating, because I did what I think a lot of people do. They make it, like, a diet. They make it into a tool to lose weight, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I was also big into Janine Roth, reading her stuff. But yeah, the intuitive eating specifically, I really liked the concepts of it. I had trouble executing it because I kept being like, well, if I eat just until I've had enough, then maybe I'll lose weight. Like, I kept getting sucked back into that loop. And then I went through the training, and it's with one of the women who wrote the book, and that helped some, but it still was a while before I really like got what it meant. So yeah, I found the book in the library just when I was searching. I was really lucky to happen upon it because it was a really interesting book.
And would you recommend the Runaway Eating book to listeners?
Yeah, the Runaway Eating book was it's been so many years since I read it. It had some helpful ideas. I wish that I had understood how much worse dieting was making everything. But I think until you're ready to hear that, you don't hear it. I mean, I read the book Overcoming Binge Eating by Christopher G. Fairburn. You know that book? And he specifically says in there, he's like, stop trying to lose weight. But I still didn't, like, I couldn't. I just, until you're really ready to hear that and really ready to make peace with whatever it is body you have right now, I feel like it's impossible. So all of those books, you know, I feel like every book comes to people at the right time, kind of, and they get different things from it every time they read it.
Yes.
I would definitely recommend Intuitive Eating or Runaway Eating to people. And that other book was good too.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And that's something I really believe is that nobody's going to get better until they're ready to, you know? And a million people could say the same exact thing and you just don't hear it unless it's your time.
Yes. Unless it's your, I think that's true.
My mind was like, but what makes them, you know, what makes it their time? what makes the light bulb go?
I don't know.
Well, if you get an infection from your antibiotics and then your father dies and then you get pregnant, that's a good combo.
Yeah. And just enough things come together.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes that's what it takes.
All right. So as we start to wrap up the episode, Jen has a saver shout out for us. So a woman she really recommends that our listeners go check out. So can you tell us a little bit more about Isabella?
My shout out is for Isabel Foxen Duke. And I just came to her stuff like right when I was at that cusp of making that change. And it was like everything that I knew or thought I knew, like finally clicked into place when I was checking out her website. She just really, she made so much sense and she really tells it like it is. And she just really lays it all out there. And there's one post and it's right on the front of her page about asking if you've fallen off the wagon. And that was the first time that I finally was like, oh, a diet is like a wagon and I'm gonna keep eating everything and falling off the quote wagon if I keep going on a diet. Like it finally sunk in. And I devoured her website, and she sends out a newsletter that always has really great insightful stuff. So I really highly recommend her. And even though I don't struggle with this stuff anymore, I still always open her newsletter because I'm like, what's she talking about this week? Because she talks about body image, like really sort of provocative stuff. And she's like highly, highly feminist and like just like a strong, powerful female role model.
Great.
Check her out then.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Well, I just want to thank you again so much, Jen, for being so open and courageous with sharing your story with us and everyone listening and letting others learn from what you've gone through.
Yes. Thank you so much.
I am really honored to share it. And thank you guys so much for having me. It's really been a pleasure.
Great. So to wrap up, do you have any thoughts on what our listeners can savor?
My biggest thing would be to savor the moment, as maybe cheesy as it sounds, because it really does. And now that I'm a mom, I see this even more. It goes by so, so fast. And it's like the more things you skip because, you know, you're not savoring the moment and not because you're worried or preoccupied about, it doesn't have to be your body, just anything. You're just, it's like you miss out on so much. And now that I'm more able to savor the moment, I am just, you know, light years happier. It's wonderful.
Right. Yeah. Good.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you.